This episode of Into the Foliage is brought to you by Leica Sport Optics. Leica products are the creation of over 100 years of knowledge in developing and manufacturing optical systems. Their quest? Simple. Creating awareness and bringing people closer to the wonders of nature. In an era of increasingly threatened wilderness, Leica serve those who treasure it by promising and delivering the ability to see wildlife as you've never seen it before. The binoculars I went with? The Trinovid HDs. These iconic binoculars are designed for the widest array of uses. They combine high definition optical performance, outstanding mechanical features, and easy intuitive operation in a durable form. When I used them, it was like having HD TV for my eyes. And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Into the Foliage, hosted by me, Ryan Dalton.
And me, Janet Garner. The series all about the green side of nature.
Where we chat to the professionals about plants, trees, fungi, grasses,
and everything in between.
Hello, Jan.
Hello.
You alright, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. Lovely.
How's your day?
Hard, looked after the grandson, so worn out.
Oh, how's that been? What activities have you done with your grandson?
Watched Holmes Under the Hammer while he had a sleep.
I thought you were going to say he loves Holmes Under the Hammer.
No, he doesn't. And then made his lunch, sat and had lunch, and then we went to the park this afternoon.
Oh, spoiled rotten.
So we could go on the swings and he could have a little run around. So did that.
When you say we go on the swings, I assume you mean both of you.
I did last week because there was nobody there just to make him laugh. But this week I didn't because there were people there. So I didn't.
Nice. Let's talk about what your gardening or your plant success this week is. What have you succeeded in the green-fingered world?
Well, I've got two things this week, actually, that I'm Well, first thing, found a frog in my garden.
Get in.
Buzzing. Absolutely buzzing. A frog. So I feel like...
And you told me this. You've got to tell the listeners what you did to the frog.
Well, I threw a snail to it because I thought, you know, eat that, really. So
That's so aggressive.
I know. I feel like I did look again and it had gone, so I'd moved, but I felt like getting it out and putting it around all the plants that might get eaten by a slug, just to, you know, say your dinner's...
You've been watching too many Holmes Under the Hammer.
Your dinner's on that day.
You're now starting to... He's now starting to move around frogs in the garden, being like, you'll love this, it's got a lovely pool just here and constant access to food.
Wildlife, yeah.
What's your number? You got another one?
Second one's not really me, but I'm absolutely so excited about this. My friend is getting an allotment.
Oh,
it's just
jealous.
So excited.
How long has she been on the list? 72 years?
No, it's not even that long, really.
Really?
And it's really good. I mean, it's only a half plot. About 90 square metres for half a plot.
I can't even get a flat in London for that.
So, and that's £20 a year for that.
£20 a year?
£20 a year for that half plot.
Right, so, I'm moving out of London. That's it. That's what's done it. That's what's done it for me.
You should. And she said that I can grow cut flowers there, so that's what I'm excited about.
Oh, great. Oh, I'm jealous. Mm. Mine's going to seem dismal after yours.
What's yours then this week?
So it's basically about my citrus fruits.
Yeah.
It always is. My citrus fruits. I've repotted four of my seedlings, which are two satsumas and two lemons. So those seedlings have gone into ceramic little pots, which apparently ceramic is best. They've gone in there. And I've put them in proper citrus soil. Which strangely they don't look like they're doing as well as my other one. It's only been a few days, but they look a bit wilting, but I have taken them out of their original soil.
Might be because you moved. Where do you keep those then? Where do they have to go?
I leave
indoors
them
indoors.
No, they're indoors now because there's going to be slow growth now because it's autumn and winter, there's less sunlight, but I've got them right by the door, so any sunlight they get whatever's there pretty much all day, so they need about, you know, 6 to 8 hours of constant sunlight a day. So they will take a long time to grow in this country. But that's what I've done. That's my activity. Call it a success. I don't know yet, but it is my activity.
If they're still alive, then success.
Shall we bring in our guest for Into the Foliage.
Yeah, let's.
Let's. Our guest today is, I'm going to introduce him as his Instagram name because I've got a feeling that many people that are listening, will know him as this, is Fungi Ali, who is a fanatic about fungi, and he's going to be teaching us all about the wonderful world of shrooms today. So, Ali, welcome to the show, and how are you?
Great. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm feeling great. I'm very excited. Any opportunity to bang on about mushrooms. And so, yeah, you know, if people ask me to, that's the difference to talking to strangers in a field and trying to get their attention. If someone actually wants it, I'll be there. So, yeah, looking forward to having at least two people are willing to listen.
I can't wait. I think this is the first year. Well, I know it's the first year that I've ever got into shroom hunting. So this is exciting for me because I've never read up about them. But let's start at the beginning. Ali, would you like to tell our listeners who you are and what is it you do?
Well, that sounds very grand. Well, I'm Ali McKernan, and known as the Fungi Guy sometimes on Instagram and other bits of platforms and whatnot. And I just, you know, do you know what I do? I walk around poking, prodding, sniffing fungi just because I love them very, very much. You know, fanatic makes me sound like I might be top of some deck or some pile somewhere. And I don't think of myself as that, but maybe if there was a label, yeah, I think about them a lot. They're a big part of my life. They're certainly my main hobby. And yeah, in one form or other, I think they probably do enter my life every day in one way or other. So yeah, in its simplest basis, it's just this wonderful passion and hobby that I have that brings me genuine great pleasure. I'm a part of some fungi groups, inevitably, as you want to learn, you end up being a part of these things. So I'm in the Northwest Fungus Group. I'm on the little committee there. And they're more senior kind of bunch of folks, but they've really took me under the wing since I joined them years ago, and I've learned so much about whilst being alongside those guys, and I can maybe come to that later about the whole learning process because it's quite a daunting thing, fungi. And I'm also in the British Mycological Society on their education outreach because I work in a primary school, so that's like a little sector to try and help teachers teach it. So I've been on that committee for a couple of years. And help create UK Fungus Day this year, which was something we do every year, but this year it was all different, like everything is. And yeah, I think that just about covers it. I make online little silly videos, identification stuff. Maybe that can come up later. So yeah, it's a hobby that sees me, like tonight, on a Tuesday night, sat doing a podcast all about my hobby, which is pretty cool.
But that's where I found you on Instagram. And I've got to say, you say silly little videos, they are awesome. They are honestly... You scroll through this Instagram of story after story, and then I came across your stories and was so entertained and captivated by this 12-second clip of yourself talking about mushrooms. They're really, really good, and I really enjoy them. I've got to just say that.
Well, thanks very much. That's nice. Well, listen, you know, there's two ways of looking at it, but ultimately the best way is that, I mean, this could sound crass, but fungi do it for themselves. I don't need to try, because fungi... genuinely, honestly, so engaging. I can't begin to tell you how many facets, how many different ways you can engage. Oh, it sounds awful. It sounds rubbish and crass. Like I feel like, you know, it sounds like what's it called, Dragon's Den? You know, like a pitching for your life here. I just, you know, not this is.
Can promise you now, we've got no cash.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Well, it's a good job, isn't it? Because I do it for free all the time, as it is. Yeah, I find them mega engaging. And hopefully I can share a few of those reasons why. Because, like I say, and here's an interesting thing. Like you said, you know, this year's your first proper year that they've been on your radar. I've been very interested to see what happens over the next couple of years. Because you're obviously showing more of an interest by, you know, having this chat tonight. And there's a couple of other people on Instagram who I've seen really get hold of it to the point where they've dedicated one day, like Fungus Friday, on their Instagram posts. And I'm like, I wonder, this is, you know, this person's mainly a birder, complete naturalist, but real bird. I'm thinking, I've got this feeling, knowing fungi the way that I do, really interested to see if it genuinely overtakes all other nature hobbies. Because I know the people that are into fungi, just it's a wormhole. A friend describes it as a wormhole that you just keep going in and in and in. So let's
see.
I look forward to seeing where this journey takes you, guys. I look forward to seeing.
So how did you get in, Ali? How did it start? How and when did it start?
It wasn't that long ago, maybe. I'm rubbish at dates and numbers, but I guess 7 or 8 years ago. So not that long, really. And it's a bit of a lame answer. It'd be lovely if I had a light bulb moment to speak of. But actually, I just wanted to do something like a wild forage. It's actually an in route for many people, the foraging edible side, and I'm sure you know that's something you might want to know a little bit more about. But so my wife put me on a little course with some guy we didn't know about who leads wild forages, and it was a springtime one, so it was all the spring greens and then fungi. You know, I loved listening to it. I loved everything about what he had to say, but it was the fungi that got me. And from there on, I never looked back really. And every year I went on that course again, the same one each year with him, because he's become a mentor and now a friend. His name is Jesper Launder, spelt Jesper. I have to mention him because I owe so much to him. He started my journey.
Wow.
And he's my mentor and fungi Jedi hero to many, many mushroomers in England. Although I've been on repeat journeys every year thinking, yeah, this year I'm going to do plants as well, I can never get past fungi because there's so much, there's so many new ones every year. So still hardly done plants whatsoever. So yeah, that was where it started 7 or 8 years ago and still here now.
And what about the rest of nature as well? I mean, before this journey began for you, were you always a naturey person, or was it kind of like I just was inquisitive about foraging and that's when it started, or were you always an outdoorsy person?
No, I wasn't. That's a really valid point, you know, that I've not really considered. Maybe that's why this means more. I'm still giddy with it. Mm. I mean, obviously 8 years on is quite something to still be giddy about anything, I suppose. But I wasn't really that. I wasn't engaged. I think I couldn't go for a walk or a hike with my wife, which she found really infuriating because there's not enough adrenaline, there's no purpose. But wow. Once I got to mushrooms, there's a purpose. Every walk has a purpose now because I've got side of my eye, in the corner of my eye, I'm keeping a peepers peeled to look for fungi. So not really. I had a grounding in it, foundation, because my dad was a scout leader, so did the whole Cubs and Scouts thing. So obviously somewhere under, you know, there's a foundation of loving the outdoors. And obviously it came back to me there. So what's interesting, you mentioned, you know, what about plants and other things? That's what's become alongside, although fungi are the top of the pile, those connections, which I'm sure you would have covered and discussed and we all know about as nature lovers, because I do consider myself that in many ways. That connection, because certain fungi only grow with certain trees, I had to learn my trees. So now, you know, I didn't know any trees 8 years ago, and now I know the main ones, and I can tell them just by the shape from, you know, 1,000 meters. I'm like, yeah, I know what that is now. I've met you enough.
So cool.
You know, because, yeah, so it's joining those dots, as a friend puts it, you know, and that's what's wonderful. Habitats, it makes me look at habitats and, like I say, trees and fauna, and it's like, ah, okay, in spaces, yeah, because I put myself in spaces I would never have done. So it's made me engage with nature and then, like I say, start joining those dots and understanding habitats. So, yeah, total respect and far more. So my journey in general nature's really only just starting out in that respect.
And that's a wonderful way of looking at it. Like, for people that are listening as well, it's like having that purpose to go out, especially this time of year, is having that thing where I will go out and learning about one thing, and then it leads on to other things. That's what I love about nature, I think, that it just can lead constantly onto everything. Now, I sent you in our email, Jan and I know sweet FA about funguses or fungi. We know, hence that error there on that wording, but we know absolutely nothing. So let's start with some basics. I wondered if you could tell us what makes a fungus a fungus.
Okay, in its simplest form, it's a load of mycelial threads that form together, coalesce, so they swell together and make a mushroom. So I know that I said in its simplest basis, that was a dreadful answer. Let me try and do better than that, okay? Here's the thing. When you meet mushrooms and toadstools, whatever you want to call them, a fungus fruit body, that is just the fruiting body of a fungus. That's just the fruit. The same way, okay, so speaking in quite simplest terms, it's not as exact as this, but essentially it's like the apple on a tree. If you pick a wildflower, it's dead. If you pick a mushroom, yes, that dies, but the fungus carries on living underground. Okay, so if it's a mushroom in the ground, you can take that and learn from it, but the fungus continues living because all you've done essentially is pick the apple off the tree. That's, you know, in a rudimentary speaking, because the fungus actually exists most of the year round, and maybe for decades and even hundreds of years, there's mycelium in the ground, which is its name, and it looks essentially like cotton wool, like a cotton wool strands under the surface, either in the substrate, which might be a dead tree, or under the ground. You've got this cotton wool-like structure, and that is the fungus itself. All these other things that we find in the woods, they're just the fruiting bodies, the reproductive part that makes seeds to make new mushrooms.
These threads are just a quick question. Are they the ones that help plants root? Because there is a powder, isn't there, like a fungi powder that you can put on.
Yes, that's right, isn't it? Yeah. Well, because it's, you know, there's a lot going around at the moment. There's a real surge in interest, which is a wonderful thing. And I'm not brilliant at the science. But ultimately, yes, there's a symbiosis, a symbiotic relationship, which essentially the plant can offer the fungus something, or the fungus gives something back to the plant. With trees, it's a mycorrhizal relationship.
That's so, the word.
Yeah, that's it. And it's been well documented that basically it's like an extension of the roots. If you were to visualize it, you visualize your tree. So let's say a birch tree, because they have loads of fungi that grow specifically with that tree. If you imagine the root system, it finishes. Well, it carries on when you've got this mycelium that's kind of suckers onto the very tips of the root. And it, in return, what it can do then is give that tree loads and loads of water and nutrients that it would never have been able to draw out of the land. And in return, the tree will give the fungus sugars because it can't photosynthesize. Ooh, can't say the word either. It can't do that the same way plants can. So you've got this symbiosis, this beautiful relationship. I think NASA did a test with a birch tree where they planted one where it had mycelium to work with and a fungus, and one where it didn't. And over a 10-year period, I think, they monitored it. And like it grew three times taller and stronger.
Wow.
You know, they're essential to many of our trees. Well, they support 90% of all green things on this planet.
Yeah.
They support everything that's green and 90% of plant life, I believe. Yeah. You know, the structures wouldn't look like they would without them. There are fungi in everybody's gardens, even if there's never a mushroom or a fruiting body. You know, that they're under there, attached to plant roots and plants. It's unbelievable. And I only know the surface of that stuff. But yeah. If that answers your question a bit roundabout, but if that gets some of it, if that covered some of it, Jan, did I get
it
there?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So what do you like about them? What is it you like? What's the fact?
Oh, that's the big one, isn't it? Now then, I've got to think, how long's this podcast? Is anyone still with us? Is anyone still awake? Right, I'm going to be really concise about this. I love, do you know what? Let me think about this. It's the gift that never stops giving. And nice. I really, really mean that.
Oh.
It never stops. So whether it's a walk to work, dropping my kids off at the swimming baths because there's some on the grass verge outside, you know, I can ruin a day at Chester Zoo with the family because actually while they're all looking at the monkeys, I'm staring at the flower beds because like, look at that, you've got a dappling in that flower beds. I've not met that one before. And I'm hop over the fence to pick a dappling in Chester Gardens, Chester Zoo. They're everywhere. They're all around us. And I love that little, you know, it's a treat. I'm not saying I find them every single day, but certainly in this season, I generally do. But, you know, there's just always, like I say, they're often on radar for most of my year. And just this little, it's like a little gift all the time. It sounds really crass. How can I not make that sound crass?
No, it's great.
That's how it feels because you'll pick something. And if you know what it is, it's like, oh, look at that. It's beautiful. Obviously, leave it where it is if you don't need to. I only pick them really to learn from them. But if I've got something around, I'm not sure what it is, but actually the smell will be the difference between it being that thing or the other thing, because IDing mushrooms can be extremely difficult, and suddenly you've got it and it smells, brilliant. It smells spermatic, which is a real thing. It's like, then it must be that. And that little light bulb moment, that's it, fungi full of light bulb moments. You give them a tap and they blow spores. You know, you give them a scratch and they go yellow and you're, now I've got that in my hand, have I? And it's this, the learning is right in front of your eyes. I could keep going here. You've opened it.
I will say now, we've just said the word sperm, so we might have lost Jan for a while. You're right, Jan. Just checking in.
Just remind me never to smell any fungi that I see.
Oh, you've got to, because it's an eye opener. If I'm ever a lead a foray and you pass that round, the first thing to do is say, what do you think it smells of? And someone in there, and then some people look and don't say it because you wouldn't just shout that out in a guided walk. But when I present it, there's all sorts. And, you know, you've got to gauge the crowd. But, you know, generally people have a good old snigger like, yeah. And obviously those who don't want to admit that they might know what it is. There's a few that
like
smell
me,
that way.
Like me.
Yeah, there's a few that semen of the non-nautical kind is what is how Jesper Launder puts it, and it's hard to forget that. So look, it's a sensory experience. If you know, this hobby is how many hobbies, and I know nature's full of it, but literally you use almost every sense. So you're using your eyes to look for them, you can use your nose to smell them, because the smells will maybe come back to that, because I can't run for too long, but ask me about smells, please let me mention those. The smells, the colors, the textures. So I'm going, what sense have you used here? Smell, touch, Taste, you can do, of course, nibbling for heat, because you can have fiery hot, or you can have beautiful mild coconut or curry. You've got touch, because it can be scurfy, slimy, sticky. And then, of course, the last one is sound, which is maybe the only sense you don't use. But again, it's been shown that mushrooms actually do have a rhythm in it, and this are creating a beat and a sound of late. Not that I can audibly hear that when I'm out in a field, but that I'm using all those senses. I mean, that's a massive part of mindfulness and well-being, which we know there's so much data for. So, you know, mindfulness, and I'm using four of the five things for that. It's no wonder it makes you feel good. So, yeah, they're just so engaging on so many levels.
That is. Yeah, you've put that. I already feel pumped about fungus now. Yeah. Like, I already feel it. I've not even, you know, I've only seen a few this year and I don't even know any really. But talking of like the different types then, like, what kind of variety can we see in the UK? Is there like, is there an approximate species list?
So roughly speaking, there's 15,000 maybe different types
in the UK.
That you can find. Oh, they reckon. I'm making up numbers here, but if no one knows, they're different. But, you know, there's perhaps in the world we know of 1 to 2 million, but because we think we've only found something like 2% of all fungi are actually acknowledged. So there could be there could be millions and millions of fungi genuinely out there, and there's new species to science found every year, not necessarily in the UK, or perhaps I just wouldn't know about that. There's a guy down in London, one of our best mycologists, and he found a new species to science just at Heathrow Airport, where he does a survey every year of the stuff that's growing around there, and a brand new one, never documented. So they're all around us all the time, and you said your question was, what could we expect to see? Did you mean like in terms of what we might find generally?
Well, like, yeah, what kind of variety, I guess? Like, how do they, what are the variety we see in different shapes, colours, sizes and stuff?
Oh, dude, you've got, you know, I can answer these ones all day long. If these get harder, I'm going to get worried for later, so I might as well go for it now. But you have balls and cups and spindles and clubs and corals and jellies and slime molds and mushrooms and tufts and brackets. There's just tons and tons of shapes. So you've got all the ones that grow on the sides of trees that maybe we're all familiar with, that we might have just have glanced like, wow, like a literally like a shelf, like a saucer on the side of a tree. So they're your brackets. But then you get these beautiful cups. There's something called the Scarlet Elf Cup, a brilliant tiny little red thing about the size of my thumbnail that grows these little red cups that grow on the side of on dead wood, rotting that down around springtime, early spring, February, March. And they're a beautiful thing. So you've got the cups, and if you give them the tiniest little puff, if it's been in a little secluded spot, give them the tiny little puff of air, blow on them, and you'll see this brilliant puff of spores, which are essentially the seeds of the mushroom, up and out and disperse into the air.
Wow.
And that's a gorgeous thing. And like I said, you can get earth tongs, clubs, corals, things that look like from under the sea. And I've met all these this year. Literally, I've met them all because you will every year. Once they're on your radar and you actively start looking, you not believe, you will see threefold the amount immediately. The minute you start looking, you'll see them. It's fabulous.
Amazing.
So what is fungus season? Is that now? You said about you're finding them all the time now. What's the best time to go hunting?
Yeah. Essentially, the boom period is autumn, without a doubt. That more fruit bodies are around and it's there. Prime season for most fungi because of the temperature and the moisture is like prime for lots of fungi to fruit. However, fungi are around us all year, but probably good for me is that there's a bit of a lull in winter in actual... I say that. You're laughing. Is it because you know that my brain must need a rest? Because it does. It needs to cool down.
I just want your family to be able to go to Chester Zoo for a normal trip.
yeah, you guys could have a good conversation, a real dissing match. they cool off a bit in winter. There's still fungi around, and that's always obviously exciting. But this is their boom period, autumn time. I mean, they do start in spring, and there's a bit of a lull around May, you know, generally speaking. And the weather's all a bit mashed up these days, so we're finding species when they, you know. I found a winter one that's a classic winter mushroom, a velvet shank, and I found that in July this year, and just like, what is going on with this world?
Meeting.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange. So the seasons used to really depict what you were finding, and that would help with ID. if someone said, you know, what's this? He said, well, it couldn't be that, although it looks like it, because actually that's a springtime mushroom. So what you've got here is the other one that's the autumn version. But these days, those lines are blurring a bit because of, you know, presumably climate change. So, yeah, but this is it. And late July is when the real big boletes and the mycorrhizal fungi are starting to peak. And then September or October, they're your big heavy months for really you should be able to tramp around any woodland and see tons of stuff if you're looking.
And you mentioned a few, obviously they always exist in underground, but the fruits, I guess, the mushroom that comes up, are there certain environments that they like, or is there certain things they require? Like you said about the trees, you said you've, you know, learned more about trees because of fungi. So are there certain trees that they like more than others?
I'm going to try and do this as a little rhyme in case anyone's listening. It's not hard. It's like a football chant. Birch, beech. Pine and oak. Said birch, beech, pine and oak. Everybody now, birch, beech, pine and oak. Birch, beech, pine and oak. And that are your big four. They're your top whack four where you will find mycorrhizal fungi and big mushrooms. Birch, beech, pine and oak. Those are the ones you want to be looking around, because oak has more species of fungi that grow exclusively with it than any other tree. Beech isn't far behind. And when I said birch and pine, yeah, wonderful. You know, don't go for a wander around a sycamore woodland. You'll hardly find a sausage. In fact, you're more likely to find a sausage than a mushroom, because I don't think sycamore have a single mushroom that grows mycorrhizally with it. And ash is very similar as well. Very few. Now, when they're dead, you've got the recyclers come in and they might start rotting it down. That's a different thing. But in terms of that mycorrhizal, that symbiosis we talked about, nothing. So if I see a big bank of sycamore at the end of a field, nah. If I saw a big bank of oak, I might go sprinting over like a loony and have a good rummage around and see what I can find. So yeah, they're your four big trees.
I saw a couple in my garden at the weekend. Now I'm wondering what they were on. I'm going to go and have a look tomorrow when I get in from work.
Go on, Jan, give us the four trees
again. I can't
now.
Birch, beech, pine and oak. Yeah, because I wrote it down.
Yeah. Yeah, we're winning. We're learning.
Ups upside your head, isn't it?
A good version. That could be the remix. Cheers, Jan.
Let's do it.
Is that what it is? I couldn't place what the tune was. It's oops upside your head. Is that what I'm
doing?
Upside
your head, yeah.
Upside your head. I was thinking it was a football chant. You're
no,
right.
No, you have to sit on the floor.
No, you're doing ups upside your head.
Sit on the floor.
Oh, my word. Right, I can visualise a video coming on now. I can see the video. Yeah. If we have a meet in person, it's the three of us rocking the boat on the floor doing ups upside your head to them.
Yes, please. And any excuse to do ups upside your head for me. Oh. Any excuse.
You know, I've
been waiting
so pleased
for it to come back.
I'm so pleased you put a name to it. Brilliant. There you go. Great. So that's they're the main trees for mycorrhizal fungi. But habitats, you know, again, I spot a zone, it kind of like, ooh, gets me, you know, wets me whistle. I'm thinking, ooh, I'd like to have a good walk in there in the autumn time. If I've spotted it in spring, thinking that would be great. So damp spots, embankments. I love an embankment. By the side of a stream, that steep and that free draining, and then you've got pasture lands. At the moment, right, we're coming to the tail end of the season. There's plenty of fungi around, but you won't find as much because that temperatures have dropped and it's getting a bit too soggy for them. However, this is the right time for something called the wax caps. Are you familiar with those, Ryan? I know you found a few mushrooms this year. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah, I've heard of wax caps. I don't know if they were in the ones I've seen, because like I said, my ID is next to nothing. So what do they look like?
Wax caps are beautiful, brightly coloured. It's like someone scattered a whole handful of petals in a meadow. So, no, I shouldn't say meadow, because that would suggest long grass. They are basically unimproved grassland, short, mown or grazed pastures that are low in nutrients and have not, this is the clincher really, have not been farmed industrially or with fertiliser. They can't tolerate it. So you're looking at spaces, and they have to have been over 60 years in that state. So I think it's declined. Wow. Those spaces in this country have declined something like 90%. You know, you could put that to any fact about nature, probably, couldn't you? But about 90% in the last 40, 50 years. But we do have plenty. And a local one, though, you don't have to be up in those uplands. You don't have to, you know, if we're talking about accessibility and everyone's, you know, it's accessible to all, churchyards and graveyards. Mm. These last few weeks I've done a graveyard tour, and I've had the most, because it's They're not heavily gardened, but they are often mown and taken care of. So it's that short grass, ancient spaces. You know, God's Acre, it's an ancient space that hasn't been touched for maybe hundreds of years. And you get some real rarities and beautiful wax caps. So I've done this wonderful every weekend. I've been out for the last 3 weekends. The things I've been finding, just absolutely gorgeous. So they're these brightly coloured, usually quite delicate, sometimes robust, gorgeous mushrooms that grow with these just remarkable colours. There's the parrot wax cap that's green and yellow, the ballerina wax cap that literally has a pink tutu. There was once considered rare, but this year I'm not having any of it because I've found dozens and dozens and dozens of them. So they could be having a good year, but also I think they're just under-recorded and not been... People aren't going to the right spaces to see them. I think they're actually, or at least locally common. So, yeah. In fact, I'll tell you this last thing about wax caps, because I love this. We have the best wax cap spaces in Europe. That pink ballerina wax cap that I mentioned, that growing, you know, 300 metres up the road, a churchyard I've never been in that looks rubbish in the autumn, but for wax caps, it's been brilliant. That pink ballerina was growing, there was 50 in a 10 square metre area. Right.
Wow.
So that was like, what? I think like what they call the mother load. You know, it's like, oh my God. You'd hope to see one. It may be in your lifetime, but as a mycologist or a fungi enthusiast, you'd hope to see it maybe once every year. What a little treat. I found 50 growing in 10 square meters. There's only one site in the whole of Denmark that has that ballerina in. And we have more sites combined than Germany, Holland, and Denmark combined, I think. Wow, so the mycologists from those countries will come here for holidays to go and look at our wax caps. And we have some of the most beautiful sites. So, yeah, they've been getting me really buzzing of late. I'd really like to try and nail some of them down because it can be quite tricky to ID some of them. So, yeah, that's really got me going these last few weeks.
So the question I bet you get asked all the time, how do you know which ones are safe to eat? How would we know? If we found a mushroom, can we eat it? What can we do?
I'm gonna be naughty. I'm gonna send it back. Do you think I might? Do you think you might know what the answer is already or not?
I think I do. Think,
I don't know. I mean, if I reckon, but would I recognise it? I don't know. Like, you know.
Go on, Ryan. Over to you then. Do you think you might know?
I think it's trial and error.
Well, look, there's no shortcut, there's no easy answer, it's pure experience. So I suppose that is trial and error. Not trying by eating it an error, because that would be quite simply, yeah, someone's done that for us, of course. Our ancestors did that. If that's what, Jan, that's what our ancestors did for us. And that's another thing to really, the weight of that, like all edibles, our ancestors learnt that, whoa, don't do that because they'll do that to you. But the fungi, but saying that, plants were the same. There would have been fatalities with plants too. But fungi just have this really bad name that comes with them. It's purely experience because people say if a silver spoon goes black in the water or if it grows on trees, it's safe. There is none. There is not a single thing you could say that says if one fungus is safer than another. There are a few that are really good starter mushrooms, without a doubt. Giant puffballs, if you've heard of those guys.
Oh, no, I've seen them.
They're like massive footballs. Yeah, big footballs. Literally a massive white ball and it can't be anything else. No, but if you picked it young, it could look like something else that would be dangerous and therein lies the danger. A giant puffball safe. Anything that has spines, in theory, is safe. The hedgehog fungi are a great beginner's mushroom. You know, like a mushroom you buy in Tesco has gill... Sorry, or any other supermarket. I'm not being sponsored. Clearly, that's where we do the shopping most of the time. Other supermarkets are.
You've got two Aldi shoppers here. Don't worry, you're already up market now.
Hey, listen, I've got an Aldi, and it's right at the bottom of the road, and I've got a great Aldi story. Maybe I could finish with that. it's mushroom based, of course.
Of course, it's not just an Aldi.
It's not just a shop. Something went right. I lost my thread. Tell me what I was saying.
The brown spines on the bottom of a mushroom.
Beginner's edibles and what limited. Oh, if you buy a mushroom in a supermarket and they have, because we've not talked about the features, but the gills, which are those flaps underneath, you know, the brown flaps or pink or whatever colour they might be. Some fungi have different things going on underneath, which is a great little ID feature. Some have a sponge, which is the bleats or porcini. Penny bun is a name that you might be familiar with. They're a very delicious edible, but there are some fungi that actually have spines. It's called the hedgehog fungus. Soft spines, you know, they don't prickle or anything, but amazing undersides. When you flip them over, you're like, whoa, it's a hedgehog. And they're a good edible. So there are a few definite beginner mushrooms, but no hard, fast rule that, ah, it's purple, so it's safe, or it grows on wood, so we're okay, or if I rub the stem, it goes blue. It's all nonsense. Literally, there's just nothing. It's just years of experience. Yeah.
And that's, I guess that adds to the amazing world of fungi, doesn't it? Because they don't set to any rule. I guess with other wildlife, especially when we look at animals, there is usually a rule that we can find. But with fungi, it's kind of like, well, no, nothing. There's no rhyme or reason here. It's just, you know, it's individual for each type.
Yeah, well, it's a good point. I mean, they are what they are. If you know, the deal is, here's the thing. You're absolutely right, but a death cap is a death cap and always will be. It takes years of experience to understand all the subtleties and features to be sure that that's what you've got in your hand. However, you know, a fox and a baby fox, you can tell it's a baby fox. A daffodil's a daffodil, you know, but fungi, a young death cap might look like an agaric.
Gotcha.
Or an older one that's a bit washed out with colour might start looking like something else, like the false death cap, which is an edible. So suddenly it's the nuances. It's just how variable they are. Every single fruit body, not every one, but many fruit bodies are so variable that you have to have met that in all its different stages over all the years to be really sure of what you're up to sometimes. There's a great example. There's one called the Deceiver, extremely common. There's a purple one, the Amethyst Deceiver. I feel like people post that a lot. You might be familiar. It's a beautiful purple mushroom. But it's called the Deceiver for a reason, because it can still catch me out. You know, I'm like, oh, what's this then? What is this? Or someone send a pic. And it's, oh, right, it's a Deceiver just looking different. Because the hygrophanous, which means they can wash out, the caps can bleach out a bit. Or it's a particularly orange version when usually it's pinky. The stem's a bit twisted than it usually would be. They're just so variable. And I don't want that to sound daunting to people. I personally would find that as exciting. Mm. It could be daunting to start out. But just pick. I've talked about that. You need to pick a mushroom to learn from it, generally speaking, I would say. People might not want to disturb it, and I totally understand that. If you want to leave something where it is just to take pictures, absolutely. And nor should you go picking 30 of something just because you can. But to pick a fruit body, you need often to see the underside, the gills. You need to look closely at the stem. You might need to dig it up slightly to see what it's growing out of, or the shape of the way the stem meets the ground. Mm-hmm. Is it growing with a bulbous base? All these little features. And like I said, the sniff, the smell, you look at the edge of the gill edge or the cap edge, there's loads of these little features. And generally speaking, as far as I'm concerned, really personally, I think learning is a hands-on experience. And just to take a photo and send it to us, say, what's this? Engage, learn from that thing in your hand. And don't forget, the fungus continues living underground. You've just picked the fruiting body. And if you're learning, if that's taking you one step closer to understanding that thing, you'll respect it from there on, you know what I mean? So, very personally, I think it's really important to get hands-on with fungi to learn from them. You know, don't start nibbling them and chewing them and swallowing bits and watch your hands for bacteria, generally speaking. But hands-on is important.
Now, we said about the big question a minute ago, but I think this is the big question for you. And you might have already answered it, I'm not sure. Do you have a favourite?
Like, is that like for music lovers and saying what's your favourite record of all time?
I think so.
I can't answer that.
Desert Island Diss of Mushrooms, yeah.
Yeah, you're not even giving me a top 10, are you?
No,
I'd have to live on an island with.
Yeah.
Right. I'd say I've got a favourite genus, which is a type.
Go.
And that would be the Belites. I love the Belites.
The Belites.
The Belites are these ones that have a sponge underneath and they're really stout and chunky. They can be small and quite... Oh, I feel like I'm describing most mushrooms to people here. They can be quite small and delicate, but you can get some real monster, big chunky things. They're very stout, chunky, homely shapes, I think one author calls them in a book that I really like. And because one of the other reasons, as well as I'm just looking, you know, excuse me, oh, I like the big ones, they can nearly always be identified. I can nearly always find out exactly which one. And there's maybe 70 odd different Belites. But I've got a key. I've got like a posh book that helps you really pin it down. You key it out. If it cuts it open and it goes slightly blue, it could be that or that. And then, you know, you make your way through the key to key it out. And Belites is one of the only genus out of all of them that you can do that with right to the end and pretty much say, hey, I know what this is now. And that's quite exciting. I love genuinely finding out what it is I actually found today out in the woods. And they stain red, they stain blue, they go bright, they've got bright yellow caps or really dull white caps and flip them over and the bright yellow underneath. Yeah, plenty going on with Belites. They bruise black if you just even touch them, the slightest press, and they leave these black-blue imprints. Yeah, there's loads going on with Belites. And
they're like me. I'm a belief.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So yeah, Belites are my favourite, and Wax Cap's coming up close behind now.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
But I did. Yeah.
I started doing some little interviews myself. I've done something called Myco Heroes. I've started interviewing. Basically, I don't know how to put this diplomatically, our more senior mycologists, because ultimately these guys have had a lifetime of it. Some of them helped shaped mycology as we know it, and no one knows who they are. We've not even got pictures of them. And yet they'll have some. I'd love to hear about their story. A little bit like you're asking me, and I'm only a few years in. I'd love to know what their history looks like, because this is pre-internet and everything. So I've done two interviews, but quite high production values. I've got a film crew and stuff and what have you. And I've only done two, but I asked both those guys what's their favourite, and neither of them could give me an answer. The only answer they kind of gave me was, I like all mushrooms. If anything, it's just a perfect one. No matter what, whether it's a common one or a rare one.
Yeah.
If it's just in its perfect state, and do you know what? They're right. Because just a beautiful version of whatever it is a wonderful thing to come across in the woods. So
that's a wonderful answer. What a romantic answer, isn't it, really? I like that.
Yeah, isn't it just?
Yeah, I mean, you've sort of almost answered the next question that we've got, really, about what would make people enthusiastic about, you know, how could you get other people enthusiastic about doing this?
It's so accessible. I hope it is. Anyway, I've really thought about this, because I would hate something to seem exclusive or middle class in any way. But look, as I've said, you know, that ride to work, I used to ride 10 miles to work every day, and it was on a major route, but all the little grass verges. And so, no, there's a bank of lime trees outside some bungalows, and I'd spot, you know, some night fungi and a brilliant belete that I did a video about. Ah, look, I only ever find them here. You don't have to be in the woodland. Leisure centres. You know, there's loads grow around different bits of the leisure centre. Subways, right next to the subway. Not the sandwich shop, I'm not advertising again. I'm talking about one that gets you under a road. You know, there's a subway just up, and there's a beautiful ring of fairing champignons. And you even get some wax caps on there. It can be my kid's playground, the bit of grass. And he hates me going looking at that, especially when I'm picking him up near his mates, of course. Because there's... I say that. I'm a little bit like... I don't know why I should call myself. A bit more like the Pied Piper these days, because I've actually asked if I can go in and teach my kids' class. So a couple of years I've been in and taught the whole class, and as much as they thought it was really cringy, actually, by the end of it, we're all dancing around the car park looking at these grass under birch and finding loads of wonderful fungi. So
amazing.
If they see me, I'm not quite as much of a weirdo now, because actually they've done it with me too. And for some of them, they're really into it. You know, I've been invited to scout groups as a result and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's dead accessible. There's fungi all around us, if you're willing to look. And like I say, it just makes you ask questions. Or it certainly does for me and other fungi lovers that I know. I suppose it could be like anything. Cactus lovers, or you guys and your plants, or orchids, whatever. You know, I'm sure there's a fan base, and they think everyone should know about orchids, or everyone should know about cacti, or aeroplanes, or whatever it is that people are into. But I know fungi, when people start to open that door, it's kind of like, ooh, you're coming in. Welcome. Get stuck in. Welcome.
I love that.
Come and get lost in here with us. Yeah.
And we've talked about the range of spaces that they live, like you said, next to subway or underpath crossings, and like in playgrounds and in church graveyards. But how do they actually spread? Like you said, they're almost like the fruit. So how do they spread and move to other places?
Well, as we speak, Ryan, their spores are in the rooms with us right now. Spores being the name for their, essentially the seeds, and they are microscopic. So you've got a YouTube after this, a mushroom sporulating, or look up puffball puffing, something. Oh, that sounds weird.
Oh, I'm looking it up.
Don't do that. Look up puffball puffing. I don't know what you'll get if you press that. I'm just trying to think of visuals of seeing spores. Go for it. So they're microscopic, but if you get, and every fruit body, so just a standard mushroom will have hundreds of thousands, most likely millions of spores that are dropping out all of the time. I'm doing this with my hands, but this is a podcast. I'm sure you guys.
I'm appreciating it.
They float off into the wind. For those who don't know, imagine my fingers, drawing down, like trickling down from an umbrella, and they float off in the wind. That's why a mushroom has a stem to lift it up out of the ground and as high as possible, so it can then, the air currents will take it away. So you could do a spore. Here's a thing, guys. You could hear something for everybody. You could do a spore print at home. So if you get yourself a mushroom, a fruit body, just cut the stem off, place it face down with those gills and the cap, so you can see the cap, on a piece of paper. If you left that overnight, within even 12 hours, you should get this wonderful print. Now, some could be white, beige, pink, tobacco brown, cinnamon brown, really varying in colours, and that could be an ID feature too. But actually, sometimes it's not there, and that's just because of the slightest air currents in your home. So actually, you need to put a glass or a bowl over the top sometimes. So that's how kind of fragile these things are, and we are breathing them in all the time. So essentially, spores are everywhere in the air, and when they land on the correct substrate, I think they have to meet another spore. Which sounds a little bit like mating, of course, doesn't it? I think they have to meet another spore. There's far more science to it than that. And then they're off, and they can start to create hyphae, which is like a little bit like the building blocks to make the mycelium. And they start spreading. They ingest nutrients from the. They've got like an external stomach. They suck in the nutrients from the soil around
Amazing.
Them, the substrate.
Do animals eat these? Like, you know, wildlife that's out in a woodland. Do
yes.
they eat?
Yes, they is the do. Answer to
so
that.
How
yeah.
Did,
yes.
How would they know then what was put? Like, this...
how do we know what they know? We don't know, do we? And you can only presume trial and error. You can just presume animal instincts are incredible things, aren't they? That, you know, they're animals like we are, and you can only presume that they know through, you know, just the way that all that genetics is passed down to the youngsters, the offspring, of what to go and where to go to hunt out the food source. I guess they know. I have seen images of foxes chomping on fly agarics, the red and white spotty one that lots of people know are familiar with. Now, it's only ever a still I've seen. I've never seen it actually chomping. But I have seen, and I've got brilliant footage. No, it's not. It's rubbish footage on a phone, but brilliant in what it is content. A squirrel with two claws around a bolete, one of these chunky ones I mentioned, just chomping away. And then it took it up into the tree, and I'm like, wow, it was a great light bulb moment, because it's like, yeah, we really do share this, because I actually went looking for bolets that I might take home and cook. I don't actually, for the record, I don't eat very much personally. It's not my main motivator at all. I'm happy just to have a nibble here and there, something really prime, but I just like fungi generally, just going finding them, and more than happy to leave them where they are. But I went out and on purpose to find bolets, and then I suddenly realised I'm sharing this space with a squirrel. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's food source too. And all these little nibble marks, you'll often find caps with loads of nibble marks. And I always put it down to slugs, because slugs do eat an awful lot. And lots of other invertebrates while we're at it. But to realise that squirrels are at it too, I'm like, yeah. And deer eat them. I think badgers do. In terms of poisonous ones, I've got this vague feeling. It is a bit of vague science. I'm good at that. Good at vague science. Squirrels, I think I've read that they have like an acid in their stomach or a chemical that means that they won't be poisoned by eating poisonous fungi. I believe.
Now that would make sense.
And bolete, it would, wouldn't it? That doesn't mean it was eating an edible mushroom, I must point out. It wasn't eating a poisonous one, it was eating an edible bolete. But in there's one particular one, the Boletus edulis, that's very well thought of around the world. And in Holland, it's called squirrel's bread. It's got a brilliant name if I read it out in Dutch, but I don't know what it is off the top of my head. And they call it squirrel's bread because it's well known that squirrels eat that bolete. So yeah, we share this space, and it is a habitat and a food source for very many invertebrates and wild things in nature. So yeah, to be respected.
Now, before our last question, so I guess our penultimate question, and you asked me, I'm only asking this because you asked me to remind you, you've got to talk about the smells.
Oh yeah. Oh good. Oh, thanks for bringing me back to that. The only reason that's just discipline, because I'm trying to learn the more of these kind of things I do, I realise I can just ramble, and that's not really a conversation, that's just me shouting at people who are not sure if they're even listening. So I've cut myself off. That was a bit of self-discipline, so thanks for bringing it back. Just listen, smells, you wouldn't believe it, and I guess I don't ever want it to sound pretentious, because mushrooms are certainly not that, but when I leave forays and I pass them around, people just say, just smells of mushrooms. Are certainly anyone who's not necessarily there of their own accord, like if I'm with a mate and I'll go, hey, just smell that. I'll go, nah, it's just a mushroom, Ali, whatever. Stop talking to me about mushrooms. We're here for something else. But on a foray even, for any novice or starter person, they often can't get anything but mushroom. But the more you smell lots of range of mushrooms, the nuances are brilliant. And so these are genuine smells. You might think I'm exaggerating slightly to sound cool.
I can't wait
not
for
at
this.
All. But watermelon, palma violets, what else have we got? Engine oil. Apparently, old sherry casks is one. You've got bed bugs, although don't ask me what bed bugs smell like, but I do know what that mushroom smells like, so I think that's what bed bugs smell like. That's the oak bug milk cap. Curry, coconut. Oh, it just goes on. There are fruits, there's apples, there's blue cheese. Oh, it's Camembert. It's wonderful. And that's wow. these. Are, and then I passed one round, and it ranged this webcap that I passed around on a foray last year, and it ranged from bananas to potato pie. I mean, so that just shows how just out. Yeah, how variable it is. And obviously, what's the word when you've got your own kind of version of what something might be? Can never think of that word. But yeah, and that for me makes something, because you might not know until you put it up there. And it's like, ah, now I know yeah. what it is. It really opens the door to that identification. Could have been one thing or another, but when it smells like that, ah, it means it's that. And those little trophy moments, those little wins, you know, and that's what fungi is full of. An ID feature that you just let, and you're like, yes, now I know what you are. And, you know, I guess it's like for kids with this Pokemon when they're walking around parks. I'm doing it with fungi.
You know what I mean?
You know, yes, I found another one. Yeah, I know
that's
what that is.
So many specific smells, though, and I love that. That sounds like, you know, it doesn't sound like you're looking or smelling a mushroom. It sounds like you're in a Lush store and you're just smelling all the soaps yeah. and you've just got all the different smells. But that's amazing.
Oh, it is. It is. Oh, it is. It's so good. Oh, aniseed. I mean, frangipan is a cracker. If you get one frangipan, it's called the Prince. There's a couple, but the Prince is this beautiful with golden scales, a huge agaric, big white mushroom, but with golden scales. And you know that's a great find because it's an uncommon find, but it smells of frangipan and it keeps that smell as you cook it out, which amazing. Is just remarkable. A beautiful, beautiful. Almonds, yeah. Amazing.
And, Jan, would you like to ask our last question?
Yeah, go on then, I will this week for a change. So if you could pass one bit of advice on to everyone regarding the natural world, what would that be?
Go and look for mushrooms. you know,
who'd have thought?
You know, listen, I don't know how to answer that without sounding crass. Oh, just going to sound cheesy, and I don't like that. I mean, I'm a cheese ball without even trying, but you know, I want to say...
I don't think it's cheesy. I think it's passion. You've got a passion for this thing, and I think...
No, but
really...
you said the natural world there, and I'm here for fungi, and I do care about the natural world. It's really made me engage with it, like I said, on a bigger level. But, you know, I want to say... Don't take it for granted, genuinely. Just think, like, what is that doing there? And can't believe that's just growing, you know, out the crack in the tarmac outside my house. I want to say it's, you know, you don't have to go to special spaces. Enjoy the nature around us. I just want to say enjoy it. But you guys are probably listeners are all nature lovers anyway. So actually, I'll just go back to the beginning. Just go look for fungi and let's see where it takes you.
I think that's what I'm going to call the episode. I think we should call it Into the Foliage, Go Look for Fungi with Ali.
Brilliant.
Ali, it's been an absolute, honestly, an absolute joy to talk to you. I think, like Jan said, you call it sounding crass, but it is honestly just hearing the passion from you, and it's absolutely lovely. And like I said, this year has been the first year that I went, do you know what? I'm going to go and hunt for a few around my local green space. And you're right, as soon as I started looking, I couldn't stop seeing them. And yeah. I was lifting logs and turning things over to try and find them. So it's lovely to learn more about them. And it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I wish you all the best with your future work.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it. I've had a lovely chat. So thanks, Jan. Thanks, Ryan. Lovely stuff.
Thank you.
I hope you find fungi. Happy hunting.
Thank you.
See you, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with the projects of work Ali is working on, you can do so on Instagram at TheFungiAli. Don't forget you can get in touch with Jan and I at intothewildpod@gmail.com or on social media at intothewildpod on Twitter and intothewildpodcast on Instagram. Whether you just want to say hello to us both, share some thoughts on the episode, or even let us know what green part of nature you'd like to hear about next. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and live the good life.